nightly to our favorite show. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
It's time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll keep you in that chair on the edge with Suspense and Beyond Good and Evil. But first, let's enjoy the lighter side with Groucho Marx and You Bet Your Life. You Bet Your Life opened a whole new field for Groucho Marx, who might otherwise have competed with Milton Berle as radio's most notable failure. By 1947, Marx had tried the air four times and bombed each time. It took a promoter like John Grudel to figure out what was wrong. Grudel happened to be in the wings one day when Marx teamed up with Bob Hope for a network show. Hope dropped his script by accident, Marx put his foot on it, and the two finished out the skit in a fantastic session of ad-libbing. By its third year, the show had arrived in radio's top 10 and won the Peabody Award, radio's equivalent of the Pulitzer, in the first award ever given to a comedian on a quiz show. In 1949, You Bet Your Life moved to CBS, the last 9 years as an NBC entry. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear with You Bet Your Life from February of 1952, another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bose, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Burton Marr, J. Miss and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is heart. H-E-A-R-T.
Oh, really?
You bet your life. The more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
That's me, General Marx. My hat's in the ring. Well, here I am again, George, with $2,000 for one of our couples.
Oh, Groucho, we invited some taxicab drivers to the program tonight, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Mr. Vernon Brown. His partner is a young lady with an interesting occupation, Miss Betty Farrell. Folks, come in here and meet Groucho Marx.
Now, if you say the secret word, you divide $100. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Miss Betty Farrell and Mr. Vernon Brown, a likely-looking duo, especially Betty. Where are you from, Betty?
Originally from Clarksburg, West Virginia.
And you're a cab driver?
Yes, sir.
Where are you from?
31st and Main Street, Los Angeles.
That's a nice city out there, too. You're shaking a little. Is your meter running, or...?
No, I'm waiting time.
Are you married, Vinan?
Yes, sir.
You are, huh? How'd you meet your wife?
Oh, I met her at a USO dance when I was in the service.
You were in the service?
Yes, sir.
What branch were you in?
I was in the Air Sea Rescue in the Army Air Force.
Mm-hmm. How old are you, Betty?
29.
Well, I thought you were about 19.
Thank you very much.
Are you sure you're 29?
I wouldn't lie to you.
Well, that's besides the point. How do you know you're 29?
Well, it says so on my birth certificate.
Let's see it.
Oh, I don't have it with me.
Could I see it some other time?
Uh-huh.
It's all kind of kinds of ways. You know, you just don't have to ask for a phone number. Birth certificate, driving license, anything. Draft card. Are you married?
No.
Ah, there's good news tonight. Just call me Gabriel Marx, huh? Now, what shall I call you, Vinan? Cabby, Hacky, or just, hey, you?
Oh, just Brownie.
Brownie, eh? A pretty big Brownie, I should say. Who do you drive for?
A yellow cab in Los Angeles.
Oh, I should think you'd be driving a brown cab, and your name would be Yellow. How long have you been a cab jockey?
Oh, over a period of 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, where do you drive this hack?
All over Southern California.
Really? Have you tried driving it up the Los Angeles River? Suppose I was down in San Diego. Now, would you drive down there and pick me up?
We're not allowed to pick up loads outside the city.
Well, thank you, not to regard me as a load. There's no law that says you can't get loaded in San Diego. Just what do you mean by that, Mr. B?
Well, each city has their own franchise cab, so we have to pick up our loads in the city of Los Angeles.
Let's see. What hours do you drive your hack?
Well, they have different shifts, but I work the 11 to 8 shift days.
Mm-hmm. If you drove it to Soda, you wouldn't have to shift. You realize that?
Oh, yeah, they're a very fine machine.
Don't call it a machine, eh? It sounds like... What sort of work do you do, Betty?
I'm in concert management, Groucho.
Oh. Who do you work for?
Moss, Heyman, and Wilson.
Moss, Heyman, and Wilson?
Mm-hmm.
What's your position in this outfit?
I'm called an executive secretary.
By whom?
By him.
Well, do you do much running in that office?
Oh, constantly. I'm like the proverbial fullback, actually. They give me the signals, and then I try and run the plays.
Those fellows, Moss, Heyman, and Wilson, must be on the offensive platoon. Well, tell me, Betty, what are your duties besides eluding the Three Stooges?
I'll never be able to go back to work after that.
You won't have to, Betty.
Well,
I have some ideas on that subject myself. Well, let's climb back in your cab, Ronnie. And tell me, do you enjoy your work, Vernon?
I certainly do. That's the only job you can be a little late on, and you're practically your own boss, and if you want to take a little time out for a little extracurricular activities, you can.
Why, Vernon? What a racket you got. You've got the only job in the world where you can pick up a blonde, charge her 20 cents a mile, and then expect a tip. What do you charge for riding in your cab, Vernon?
Oh, it's 50 cents for the first drop and 10 cents for each additional two-fifths mile.
Wait a minute. You drop your fare and charge them 50 cents? You charge extra for backing up over them? What do you mean by drop?
Well, when you get in the cab and sit down, why, we drop the flag. That's 50 cents.
Suppose I don't sit down. Suppose I stand up all day. What do you mean that?
Well, the law won't allow us to take care of you that way.
What do you mean?
We can't haul you standing up.
Not even if I give my seat to a lady? Suppose I prefer standing. What then?
You know, I just have to take a bus.
I was going to give you a big tip, but now I won't. That crack just cost you a nickel, old boy. Well, you're a charming couple, and I've enjoyed this little chat. It's been most restful.
Oh, thank you.
Now, in just 1 minute, you're going to play your Bet Your Life for a chance at the $2,000 question. Right now, I want you to listen carefully to this.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
All right, now let's see how you work together as a team. George?
You bet as much of your $20 as you want on each of four questions, and the couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $2,000 DeSoto Plymouth question later in the show.
All right, here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected familiar sections of cities. Here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try?
19.
19? You don't even consult this with Betty, huh?
No, they always tell me men handle the money, so I'll just go along with it.
Not in my book. In what city do you find Greenwich Village?
New York.
New York is right.
You're on your way. You have $39.
Remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, how much of the $39 will you bet on your second question?
38.
In what American city do you find the Basin Street section?
New Orleans.
New Orleans is right.
You now have $77.
How much are you going to bet?
76.
Here's your third question. $76. In what city do you find the Nob Hill section?
San Francisco.
San Francisco is right.
You now have climbed to $153.
And here's your last chance to be the other couples. How much are you going to go for?
152.
Okay. In what city do you find the Loop?
Chicago.
Chicago is right. Look at that, kid.
You wind up with $305.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
A man from a hardware store and a housewife were chosen, Groucho, just before we went on the air. And here they are, Mrs. Enriqueta Vasio and Mr. Peter Lang. Come in here and meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to You Bet Your Life. Say the secret word and divide $100. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Let's see now. Enriqueta Vasio?
Enriqueta Vasio.
Vasio and Peter Lang. And Mrs. Enrique, how do you pronounce it?
Enriqueta.
Enriqueta Vasio, huh?
Well, if you want to call it that way.
I can see I'm going to have trouble. What does your husband call you?
He calls me Mujercita.
And what do you call him?
Corazoncito.
And after that, I suppose you start slugging each other. What is that in English?
Mujercita means little lady.
Oh, well, you're a little lady, all right.
And corazoncito means little heart.
Oh.
Secret word.
You said heart, that's the secret word, so here's 50 smackers for you and 50 pesos for you. Now, what do those names mean in English? One means little heart, and what does the other one mean? Little club?
Well, I found a new definition for the heart.
Oh, 50 smackers, huh? How many pesos is that?
Pesos? You're good in mathematics?
Let's forget it. Now, what do you want me to call you? I can't keep track of these, Enriqueta and Pazio. What do you want me to call you?
Well, my friends call me Keta.
Keta. I'll just call you Sam. That's simple. Where are you from, Keta?
You mean at first?
Where are you from generally? Let's put it on.
I was born in El Paso, Texas.
In El Paso, Texas?
See?
Now, your name is Peter. That I can pronounce, huh? You're the hardware man, is
yes,
that right?
Sir.
Where are you from, Pete?
Salt Lake City, Utah.
Oh. And how long have you been away from there?
Oh, about 30 years.
30 years?
30 years.
How old are you?
31.
Did you come by cab?
Yeah, I was caught.
Where do you work, Pete?
I work in Beverly Hardware Company in Beverly Hills, Beverly's oldest store.
Oh, is that so? I go in that store frequently then.
We appreciate your patronage.
Well, I'd go in anyway. Now, what do you carry in your store?
Oh, probably 50,000 items.
Name them.
I'm thinking about a week. I think you get them all.
Well, I have plenty of time. Make it the first week in August, huh? Why do you have to carry so many items?
Well, we have quite a number of things, and in those things we have different styles and sizes of the same thing.
Mm-hmm, I see. Well, could you give us an example?
Oh, sure. We take nails. We've got common nails, box nails, galvanized nails, finishing nails, roofing nails, flooring nails, nails with big heads, little heads, and no heads at all.
How do nails get big heads? I mean, the little nails tell them how pretty they are?
Well, it's a hit on the head from the start that does it.
Oh. Now, suppose I slunk into your store. Now, what are some of the things you try to hook me, sell me?
Well, we've got locks and butts and catches and even a Hawaiian wriggler.
A what?
A Hawaiian wiggler.
Hawaiian wriggler? Wiggler?
Right.
Could you get me a Hawaiian wiggler? About 108 pounds with blue eyes. Well, could you try?
Yes, we can probably finish you with better bait than maybe you've been using.
Well, that's certainly possible, huh? Now, Mrs. Vaccio, do you do anything besides housewifing?
Yes, I work for the youth services for the Board of Education.
Oh, really? Well, what do you do for the Board of Education?
I teach arts and craft to underprivileged children.
Oh. Well, suppose I was one of your pupils. How would you go about teaching me something?
Well, if you were a little girl, I would say, Maria, if you have an old skirt at home, bring it and I'll help you make an apron out of it.
Yeah. That's my ragged old skirts. I didn't want it. What else do you do?
Well, I also teach them how to sing and dance, Mexican folk dancing. And,
oh.
And songs, the Lingan songs also.
Mm-hmm. Well, could you do something for us?
Yes. I'll sing you an Indian in Tarascan language.
You have to have music for this?
No.
Oh?
Cheparin, 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 toma te teco ningone. Ai chiqui vidiri, ai chiqui matore, cu wecan me wecan chupane. Corale churape tu male, ai, corale churape tu male. Ai chiqui vidiri, ai chiqui matore, cu wecan me wecan chupane.
That was very pretty. What does it mean in English?
Well, I don't know.
Well, that gives us something in common. You don't know what you're saying, and I don't know what I'm talking about. Well, I must say this has been very educational. Now you're going to play your Bet Your Life. You beat our other covers, and you'll get a chance at the $2,000 question. I can't tell you how much you have to win, but George is going to remind our listeners.
The taxicab driver and Betty Farrell won $305, and the secret word is still heart.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected music through the years as your category. Here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you risk?
15.
This song was popular at the turn of the century. Give me the title. I Wonder Who's Kissing Her Now is right.
And you're on the way. You have $35.
Now, how would you say that in Mexican? I Wonder Who's Kissing Her Now.
¿Quién la estará besando?
Isn't that cute? All I know is Posse. Posse, Gracia, and Baracho.
What's Baracho?
Drunk. All right, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, how much of the $2,000? How much of the $35? I got phenom and blood in me. I forgot to tell you.
$34.50.
You're going to bet $34.50? All right. This song was popular during the 20s. What's the name of it? Change is made. Change is made is right.
You're really climbing. You have $69.50.
Here's your third question. How much of the $59.60 will you bet?
$69.50.
Oh, yes. How much of the $59.60 will you bet?
Well, $69.50. Let's see.
$68. Okay. The late Mildred Bailey helped popularize this song of the 30s. Give me the title.
$137.50.
And here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the $137.50 will you risk?
$135.
All right.
$135 smackers. This song is currently one of the nation's favorites. Okay, Jerry.
Wind up with $272.50.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Thank you. Well, we invited some women who work for newspapers to the show tonight, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Miss Glenys Reason, and her partner is Mr. Henri Vallée, who has an interesting background, Groucho. And here they are. Folks, come on in and meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kids. Say the secret word and divide $100. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Miss Glenys Reason, is that right?
Mrs. Glenys Reason.
Mrs. Glenys Reason?
That's
oh,
right.
I'm sorry to hear that. And Mr. Henri Vallée, eh?
Yes, sir.
Mrs. Reason, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I hate to say that. What does your husband do?
He's a student at the Los Angeles College of Optometry.
Oh, but he can't see his hand before his face, huh? How long did you go together before you married him?
About a year.
Mr. Valley, where are you from, Hank?
Brussels, Belgium. Brussels, Belgium.
Oh, from Belgium, huh?
Yes.
Oh, Belgian, Brussels sprout, eh? Is your wife from Brussels?
No, she's Romanian.
Oh, so am I. Every morning I'm Romanian in bed around 9 o'clock. Where in Romania is she from?
Bucharest.
Oh, well, I Romanian in bed with my Bucharest. Henry, do they make jokes like that in Belgium?
Oh, no, they don't make jokes like this anywhere where I have been.
Well, just where have you been?
I have been in 32 countries.
Have you ever been in Nome, Alaska?
No, I haven't.
Well, it happens that that's the most popular joke in Nome, Alaska. They like them cold up there. And in the future, I'll thank you never to mention Romania again. Let's see now. What sort of work do you do, Lennis?
I'm in the classified department at the Santa Monica Outlook.
Oh, well, apparently I've been reading the wrong columns. Occasionally I do look through the classified ads. They always seem to have a man looking for a rich widow. Or a woman looking for a rich husband. Do you have, you carry ads like that?
Oh, once in a while. Mm-hmm.
Do you help these people write their own ads?
Yes, part of my job is to frame the ad.
I don't want to frame the ad. I just want to frame the rich widow who runs the ad. Suppose I wanted to sell my house. Now, how would you frame the ad?
Well, the average ad would read something like, lovely eight-room house, three bedrooms, two baths, enclosed yard with swimming pool, prominent actor sacrifice, leaving town.
Does it say why I'm leaving town? Say, that ad sounds pretty good. I'll buy that place. As soon as I get rid of the dump, I'm living in it. Suppose I was looking for a rich young spinster. How would I advertise for that?
Well, you'd simply describe yourself and describe the girl you're interested in.
And you'd expect that to get results?
Good hope.
I think it would be better if I just described the kind of girl I'm interested in. If I described myself, people would think I was selling a secondhand lawnmower. And in fact, I was a gay blade at one time. Well, help me out with my ad. Now, how would you frame it?
Well, I'd say something like, eligible bachelor, well-groomed, diversified interests, desire to meet rich, attractive widow, object matrimony.
I don't think that would do it. How about active, cultured gentleman looking for a 105-year-old heiress? Must have bad corp, object money. Let's get back to you. Does your wife have any little Belgian pet names for you, like my little Belgian Harry?
Well, she calls me Puyo.
No, I said pet names.
It's a pet name.
Huey is a pet name?
It's a pet name.
What does it mean?
It's Romanian. It stands for little chicken.
Means little chicken, right?
It does, yeah.
Any man who allows his wife to call him Pewee must be henpecked. Imagine that joke in Romania. Why does a Pewee cross the street? And he complains about my jokes.
That's not a joke.
Well, Henry, I've kidded you, but frankly, you're a nice fellow, and I've enjoyed chatting with you. Isn't he a nice fellow?
Very nice.
Well, she's a lovely girl. I think I'm very fortunate.
Well, I think the three of us will be very happy. Now you're going to play Your Bet Your Life for a chance at the $2,000. You run your $20 and more than the other couples. I can't tell you how much you have to win, but George is going to remind our listeners.
the taxicab driver and Betty Farrell still lead with $305. And the secret word is heart.
All right, here we go. Let's see how I can build you $20. You selected famous men of foreign countries. Here's your first question. How much would you bet?
$19.
$19, all right. Paul von Hindenburg was a general of what country?
Germany.
Germany is right.
You have $39.
Remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. How much of the $39 will you try now?
38.
38. What nationality was the violin maker Stradivari?
Italian.
Italian is right.
You now have $77.
Here's your third question. How much of the 77?
76.
Geoffrey Chaucer was a famous poet of what country?
Chaucer. England.
England is right.
You've climbed to $153.
And is your last chance to beat the other couples? How much of the 153?
All of it. She said all.
All of it? Okay. What nationality was the painter Goya? G-O-Y-A.
Spanish.
Spanish is right.
And you wind up with $306. And that means that you, in just 1 minute, get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $2,000 question.
Oh, really?
Thank you.
Just a moment. You're the winning couple by $1.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, good.
And here comes the winning couple, Groucho. Mr. Valley and the girl from the newspaper all set for the DeSoto Plymouth $2,000 question.
All right, here we go for $2,000. I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you. Think carefully and please no help in the audience. Here it is. The capital of Tibet is a mysterious city surrounded by great mountains. It is the center of Buddhism and the home of the Dalai Lama. It's been in the news from time to time ever since you can remember. For $2,000, what is the name of this forbidden city, the capital of Tibet?
Lhasa.
Lhasa is right. Well, you win $2,000 plus how much in the quiz, George?
$306 in the quiz.
That's $2,306. Congratulations from the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast. You bet your life.
Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at the same time for the Groucho Marx Show, when the big question will be worth $1,000. And don't miss Groucho's television show, also presented by the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America.
From 1952, it's been Groucho Marx with You Bet Your Life. In a moment, we'll keep you on the edge of your chair with suspense beyond good and evil as yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Suspense billed itself as radio's outstanding theater of thrills. First heard on CBS in June of 1942, it continued on the air for the next 20 years with many talented directors. Suspense dealt with life or death situations. That was what suspense was all about, the slow tightening of the knot. Suspense was known as the actor's theater. People like Cary Grant, Frederick March, Charles Laughton, Humphrey Bogart, Lucille Ball, Gregory Peck, and more headed the casts. Many top film stars asked to return for encore performances. By the fall of the first year, Joseph Kearns, the grim-voiced fellow known as the Man in Black, was aboard as narrator. That continued through the Roma Wine years, with Truman Bradley, another of radio's most distinguished voices, doing the commercials. The Man in Black disappeared by the time the show went to 60 Minutes in 1948. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. It's October of 1945. Here's Suspense with Beyond Good and Evil, another classic show from the golden age of radio on yesteryear.
Suspense.
Roma Wines bring you Mr. Joseph Cotton as star of Beyond Good and Evil, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Roma Wines bring you Mr. Joseph Cotton in Beyond Good and Evil by Ben Hecht and Douglas Whitney in a remarkable tale of suspense.
Why, Dr. Pierce, good evening.
Good evening, Mary. Is Dr. McKillop still awake?
Oh, yes. We don't put him to bed until 8 or later. Is evening service over already?
For shame, Mary. A parson's housekeeper, and you forget we don't hold service on Wednesdays?
Why, it slipped my mind it was Wednesday, sir. Of course, you've come to read to Dr. McKillop. He'll be so pleased.
There's so little I can do if he were able to let us know in some way.
I can tell by his eyes, sir. Whenever you're here, they fairly glow.
Well, I suppose, helpless as he is, not able to speak or even write, my visits are at least a diversion.
You? You're more than a diversion, sir. You're his hope, if I may say so.
No, Mary. The Lord is his hope.
Oh, yes, sir.
The Lord struck him down with paralysis, and in time the Lord will surely free him from it. Where is the doctor?
In his study, sir. We'll leave him there until bedtime.
Very well. I'll go in for an hour or so.
Stay as long as you like, Dr. Pierce. We won't disturb you. Dr. McKillop. It's Dr. Pierce come to read to you.
Good evening, Dr. McKillop. Good evening, good evening, good evening, good evening. Ah, you're a most satisfying companion, McKillop. You hang on my every word and you never talk back, never but once. And after tonight, you won't get the chance, so speak up, Doctor. Why don't you? No. Oh, of course, the cat's got your tongue. Well, I'll turn up the lights a bit so I can at least bask in your baleful stare. There, that's better, much better. Yes, tonight is your last chance, McKillop. Tonight is the consummation, the grand finale, the end, the act three curtain on a great play about death, redemption, about good and evil. And I won't shrink from your eyes tonight, McKillop. Your eyes can't kill, but I can kill. I have the mind and the will and the hand. I've killed one man that you know. And tonight, I'm going to kill again. No reading from the good book tonight, Doctor. No more metaphysics now. I'm going to tell you a story. Much of it is ancient history to you, but I think there is enough new to hold your interest. I know it will hold my interest because I enjoy talking about myself. Well, you already know I killed a man. You know who he was. And you even know who I was before I became Dr. Howard Pierce, pastor of this good and godly community. At least you know the name Philip Gentry. But you never knew the soul of Philip Gentry, Doctor. The contempt, the sum of evil that was in me that night it all began. That was 3 months ago, a stormy night, as you remember. And where was I? I was crouched in a swamp with a man named Mac. Because we had just escaped from prison, hiding like an animal in the deep mud and ooze, alien from the whole human race. Gentry, where are you going? To the highway, fool. Gotta get out of this mud and make time.
But Pete's back there in a swamp. You can't leave him.
Why not?
Because he'll die. We all gotta stick together. He'll die back there.
Listen, we took equal chances when we made this break. I'm not gonna take extra chances for anyone. We have to make time before daylight, before the rain stops. They'll bring out dogs in the morning.
Dogs? Okay, you're the boss.
See, there's the highway now beyond the fence.
Yeah, so what do we do? Where do we go?
We split up.
But, Gentry, shouldn't we stick together?
We split up. I go my way, you go yours. I'll meet you in Chicago later.
At Tony's place?
Tony's place.
Okay.
2 or 3 weeks. The manhunt cools off.
Okay, we'll make a great team, you and me. We'll make them suckers scream. Chicago. And then maybe South America.
All right, Mac. Save the dreaming for later. Right now, you've got to get moving. Now, go on, fast. He headed north. I walked a mile or more this way south. Then I saw the car. It was parked close to the edge of the road, its headlight almost blacked out by the driving rain. And by the glow of a flashlight, I saw a man bending into the rain, struggling to change a tire. He was alone, so I walked up to him.
Oh, you startled me. didn't expect to see anyone out this late.
You picked a bad night for a flat.
Yes, and it's the second today. I'm going to be awfully late.
Here, let me...
Oh, no, but if you'd hold the light.
Oh, sure. Come a long way?
From Detroit. I'm on my way to Carlton. I'm supposed to get there this afternoon.
At your home, Carlton?
Well, it will be. I'm the new minister there. My name's Pierce.
Oh, of course. I didn't notice you were a preacher.
Do you know Carlton?
Well, pretty well.
I'm taking over for Dr. McKillop at Grace Church.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of him.
He's been in bad health, so I'm taking his place.
Thanks.
Bolt is stubborn. I can't seem to...
Yeah, let me try.
No, I'll manage.
Give me the wrench.
No, really, just hold the line.
I said give me the wrench.
Well, all right, it's awfully good of you.
But, wait, what are you doing?
I need your car, Dr. Pierce. You're going to be even later than you thought.
No, please. Please don't hit me.
Hey, let me see your license, buddy.
Huh? My license?
Oh, yes, I have it here. Here it is.
Hmm?
Howard Pierce, occupation. Oh, a minister. I didn't notice.
Yes, but, what is it with ice speeding?
No, we're checking all cars on this road. There's a bad break at the state pen. Yeah. Three men, they might come this way.
Say.
But I won't hold you any longer, Reverend. Going far?
Well, to, Carlton.
Oh, now I get it. Imagine me not catching on right away.
Catching on?
Sure. You must be the new preacher for Grace Church. You're taking Dr. McKillop's place.
Why... Yes, I am.
You're going to the parsonage now?
I was going,
I'm going into headquarters now, and...
Well,
I have to go right by Dr. McKillop's house. You follow me.
Oh, I couldn't...
Oh, that's not out of my way at all. Not more than a block. I'll go slow so you can't lose me, okay?
Oh, all right.
Well, that's the ticket. Really tickle old Dr. McKillop to have you delivered right to his door. Say, I bet you never counted on this kind of reception in Carlton, Reverend Pierce. Now, did you?
No, I certainly didn't, my son.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as star Mr. Joseph Cotton in Beyond Good and Evil by Ben Hecht and Douglas Whitney. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Joseph Cotton as Philip Gentry in Beyond Good and Evil, a play well calculated to keep you in suspense.
My arrival in your dull, pleasant town of Carlton, remember? Officer Owens and your very beautiful daughter escorted me to your study.
Father, Mr. Owens brought Dr. Pierce.
Dr. Pierce, come in. You and Mr. Owens wait outside for a few minutes, Lucy.
Yes, okay. Yes, all right, Father.
Sit over here, Dr. Pierce. I can't tell you how relieved I am to see you.
I relieved to finally be here, Dr. McKillop.
Yes, well, I really couldn't bring myself to sleep tonight without first talking to you. You see, the situation's serious.
Serious?
My health. I'm a sick man. I've had one stroke, as you know.
Oh, yes. You wrote.
Yes. Well, I could have another one at any minute. The doctor says a worse one. And I feel it essential that the work of the parish is in firm hands. This parish needs a young man.
Well, I hope to be of service.
I've heard only good of you, Dr. Pierce. Oh. And you know, you're even younger than you looked.
And I look...
In the picture you sent, darker to your hair.
I'm afraid it wasn't a good likeness.
I have the picture here somewhere on my desk with your letter.
What did you want to talk to me about, Dr. McKillop?
All the work of the parish. Oh, yes, here's the photograph. It's Dr. Pierce.
Is there something wrong, Dr. McKillop?
It's not. Who are you? This isn't your picture. Who are you?
I don't think that would interest you, Dr. McKillop.
Something's happened to Dr. Pierce. What did you do to him? You're...
What do you think I did, Dr. McKillop? Go on.
Guess. Guess. Don't play with me, you sanctimonious fool. Speak up. Speak. Oh, brother, don't tell me. You've had a stroke. You can't speak. Is that it?
Yeah.
Well, I'll find out. I'll take that picture, Dr. McKillop. Now, if you don't mind.
Dr. Pierce, we thought we heard...
Yes, Miss Lucy, something's happened to your father. We were talking and all...
Hey, he's sick. I'll call the doctor, Miss Lucy.
Oh, yes, please, Mr. Owen.
It's another stroke. He can't speak, apparently. He can't move.
Oh, Father. Father, what can we do?
We'll have to wait for the doctor and maybe even then.
I know. The doctor said he could be paralyzed for months, years, but he mustn't die.
Oh, I'm sure the Lord will spare him. If we have faith.
Oh, yes, yes. Look, he can hear us, see his eyes.
I see.
It's a blessing you got here tonight, Dr. Pierce, a blessing. You are going to stay.
Well,
but you must.
Well, I wasn't sure, but since this has happened to your father, yes, I'll stay. I hope I prove worthy. Dear friends, you may wonder that I chose this subject for my first sermon to you, the agony of the thief. It is no wonder, for as I spoke to you of such a man, a thief beaten, outcast, and alone, I spoke at the same time of each of us, from the mighty to the fallen of that substance which we all share, our human dignity. As beings made in the image of God, remember, the agony of our Lord was shared by two thieves crucified beside him that he might be numbered among the transgressors. And remember his words to one, verily I say unto thee, today shalt thou be with me in paradise. We will sing him 426. O God, our help in ages past. My first sermon, Dr. McKillop, and it was duck soup for me. You couldn't understand how such a thing could be done without faith. Well, you didn't know I'd been a lawyer. I've done a lot without faith, McKillop. It doesn't take such a holy man to care for your sheep. From the first day until now, I've been the ideal parson. Even the day I got that call from young Hubbard, yes. I played the part. I forgot. This is all news to you. You didn't know about that, about the conversation I had with young Hubbard in the study in the church.
Dr. Pierce?
Yes?
I missed your first service, son, doctor.
Oh.
I thought I'd pay you a call.
I'm glad you did. Sit down.
Oh, thank you. My name's Hubbard. I work at the bank, First National. I'm the chief teller.
Well, that's a very responsible job for a young man.
Oh, I don't know. I suppose it is, but I don't have much more responsibility than the other fellas, except at the end of the month. Then it's a strain.
The end of the month?
Well, sure. Well, that's when I I've never told anyone about this. So
if it's confidential, Mr.
Oh, naturally, not so far as you're concerned, Dr. Pierce.
You see, the 30th of the month, we move all our deposits to the Federal Reserve Bank.
Uh-huh.
$50,000 or more.
Uh-huh.
Well, you can see I wouldn't want some people to know that.
You mean you take the deposits alone?
Oh, no. That'd be even worse than it is. There's an armored truck comes to take the money. Comes by around 9:30 at night. But I'm alone on the bank until it gets there.
Hmm.
Sometimes when I'm sitting there at my desk, I think how easy it would be.
Hmm.
All someone would have to do is shoot me through the glass door. See what I mean?
Faith, McKillop. God never sendeth mouth, but he sendeth meat. Out of all this community's 35,000 souls, Hubbard chose me to share his secret. I sent a letter that night to Mac, care of Tony's in Chicago. As you can see, Mac, the setup is simple and foolproof. If you do as I say, leave Tony's now, hide out until the 28th of June, then head this way. Case the job first, because you must be at the bank not later than 9 p.m. on the 30th. Yours, Gentry. That meant
2 months to wait. 2 months until the death of young Hubbard. 2 months until I had $50,000 and a clear getaway. 2 months until tonight. 2 pleasant months to play a saintly part, warmed by adulation, warmed by love. Because even you could see what was happening to your daughter, your very beautiful daughter, Lucy.
Dr. Pierce, do you ever think of anything besides your work?
I don't know, Lucy. What sort of things?
Well, do you ever think of yourself, of a full life for yourself?
Why, of course. That's why I work. My work gives me a full life.
You don't know what I mean.
Yes, I think I do.
You see, I have to tell you, even if you don't want to hear.
Lucy, my dear.
I have to tell you that I love you, Howard. I know I can't expect that to mean much to you.
It means a great deal.
Not enough.
Lucy, dear, you told me once that you were engaged to someone.
Yes, I'm supposed to be. Oh, Tom's all right, but he's little and unimportant and afraid. He's afraid to dare anything or do anything. He's meek.
The meek shall inherit the earth.
You don't believe that, Howard Pierce. Even if you are a parson, you don't believe it.
What do I believe, Lucy?
I don't know exactly. But when I first saw you, I knew that you were like me. You have boldness and strength. You have an inward feeling about life.
I let it ride. Wasn't any harm in that, Doctor, so far as I could see. Lucy was a great help, blinded by what she calls love. And what did I feel? Love? Doctor, a man who has mastered the use of words as I have no longer knows what they mean, but only what they do. With Lucy, so long as the word love so served me, I used it. After a while, it became a source of danger. That was last week, Wednesday, when I came the evening to read to you.
Howard. Howard, the most wonderful news, guess.
How can I guess?
Don't you know? The most wonderful thing that could ever happen to us.
No, what's that, Lucy?
Well, I never breathed a word to Father about us because you asked me not to, Howard. Not until he can talk to us and give his blessing.
Lucy, you didn't...
Oh, no, not yet. But the doctor was here today, and he told me Father will speak again soon, any day now.
No.
He doesn't know why he hasn't already. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, it is.
Howard, what's the matter?
Nothing's the matter.
Well, but there is. I can
see
it.
Sit down, Lucy.
All right, Howard.
I was going to tell you before, my dear. You see, well, I can't marry you, not ever.
You can't.
Please, you mustn't ask me why. It doesn't matter why. Do you understand?
Because you don't love me.
If you have to believe that, all right. Only you must go on and live your life as though you'd never met me.
As though I'd never met you.
Yes.
Do you know what that means?
Whatever it means.
It means I'll marry Tom. It means I'll have a little, quiet, secure life.
Best life for you, Lucy.
Tom in place of you. Well, maybe you're right. I won't ever have great happiness with him, but after this, I'll never have a greater unhappiness.
Mustn't be bitter, Lucy. If you hadn't known me, you would have married your Tom, and yes, you would have loved him.
All right. I will marry him. I'll marry him this week in church. And you'll perform the service, Howard. You'll be the one to make me Mrs. Tom Hubbard.
Who did you say?
Tom Hubbard. I'll be a banker's wife.
I never knew his name before. Well, no matter what you think, Lucy, I'm sure you'll be happy. Don't ask me why I didn't kill you, Dr. McKillop, when I heard that you might speak now at any time. I can still smother you with a pillow and no one would ever know. I suppose killing will always be distasteful to me, a job for cruder minds. It isn't because of any moral scruples, believe me. And don't you believe, Doctor, that ethics had any part in what I did about Lucy either. Not for 1 minute. It was just that I wanted my hands free this last week. It was just that I believe in leaving a place tidy, no loose ends. If it happens that my neat habits turn in a good deed now and then, that doesn't make me a Boy Scout. After all, if I were a higher being like you, I might be upset by thinking of things like killing Lucy's husband tonight. Tom Hubbard, as he sits at his desk at the bank. Here it is, the 30th, and I've got a very important date in half an hour. Well, Doctor, did it interest you? Now that you know the real Philip Gentry, do you understand? I doubt it. I doubt if you, with your good book and your hymnal, your years of tending the good sheep in the rich green pastures here, could ever understand one-tenth of what a man like me feels and is. But it doesn't matter. I don't need your understanding. Good night, Doctor. Sleep well.
Good night, Dr. Pierce. Will you drop in tomorrow?
Oh, tomorrow? Well, we'll see about tomorrow. We'll see.
Who is it?
It's Dr. Pierce, Tom. Let me in.
Oh, Dr. Pierce.
Yes.
Just a minute.
I wanted to make sure. You see, this is the night when the truck is... Yes, I remembered. That's how I knew where to find you. Do you want something? Lucy's feeling sick. I came to send you home.
Lucy?
Yes.
Oh, but I can't. I have to stay.
I can stay for you.
Gee, I don't know. I'm supposed to stay.
Lucy is calling for you, Tom.
She's really sick? Well, all right. I guess with you here, it'll be all right.
Just tell me what to do.
Well, that's the money already in those sacks.
Yes. And I sit here?
Yes, right at this desk.
Gee, I don't know what the directors will think. Now, run along, Tom. They'll never know. Even if someone walks by from the outside, they'll never know if it's you or me sitting here.
Got him. Right through the head. He ought to have the money ready somewhere near him.
Mac!
What? Who's there?
Mac. Come here, Mac.
Gentry!
Yes. Gentry, Mac.
But something screwy. You said in your letter...
No. I didn't have a chance to tell you. The plans were changed, Mac.
Gentry... Honest, Gentry, I didn't mean to shoot
you. I know. You'd better go. I'm dying, Mac.
Now, I ain't gonna leave you here. What do you think I am?
Yes, you are. They won't get me, Mac. I'm dying. You go on now. Only you won't be able to take the money. The plan is all changed.
Okay. That don't matter. The money is...
Remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom.
What? What are you talking about?
That's from the Bible, Mac. You wouldn't know it, I guess. It's from the Bible. It was said by a thief.
This, dear friends, was the man Philip Gentry, or Dr. Pierce, or what other name he may choose in eternity, the man whom we bury today. That night when he stood above my bed, pouring defiance and bitterness into my ears, thinking that I was paralyzed, I could both speak and write. My paralysis had been gone for many days, but I did not speak, because I knew what Philip Gentry would do, what he had to do. I knew what he denied, that to accomplish work as he had in God's vineyard, a man must have faith, even though he deny that faith. That is why, in spite of all, he protected my daughter's happiness. That is why he could not kill me, for the work he did here had molded him, in spite of himself, into a man who was truly a servant of God. To such a man, our Lord would say, "Verily, I say unto you, today shalt thou be with me in paradise."
Joseph Cotton appeared through the courtesy of David O. Selznick, producer of Alfred Hitchcock's Spellbound. Next Thursday, you will hear Mr. Henry Fonda as star of Suspense, radio's outstanding theater thrill.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From October of 1945, it's been Suspense with Beyond Good and Evil, starring Joseph Cotton. Well, that's all we have time for today, but join us again next week at the same time and invite a friend to listen and enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those thrilling days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you, Sodio, Vodio, Dodio, Do. Radio.